Welcome to another episode of The Breakdown. There's been this provincial budget. It had numbers and it had some promises. And then it did things that it said it wasn't going to do. And then it didn't do some things that it said it was going to do. And it was all very, very confusing just from a delivery standpoint. But one of the big questions that a lot of people have is, how does this provincial budget actually impact Albertans? Because there's so much confusion over what was promised versus what was delivered and what was delivered versus what was promised. And tonight, we're going to try to focus in on one very specific little area. And that area, it's probably going to be a conversation that we have a few times over the coming months, has to do with education. So I'm going to do my very, very best not to make a train wreck of this, because we're having ourselves a panel discussion of sorts tonight. We're joined by three representatives for the Edmonton Public School Advocacy Network. I'm very excited to welcome to the show. I'm going to try to get through all three: Jody McDonald, Nancy Hunt, and Nancy Kirkpatrick. We have two Nancys. I will do badly. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
So before we get into the meat of the conversation, if you will, in regards to the budget and what its implications are and what you're ecstatic over, I'm sure, nothing but good news, especially for Edmonton. If we can talk a little bit about who is Nancy and Jody, and I'm going to make it interesting and just say I'd like Nancy to go first.
Okay, thanks. So I'm Nancy Hunt, and I have three children. One of them is in elementary school, one of them is in high school, one of the most crowded high schools in Edmonton, and my third is in university. So I've been involved in public school, school councils, parent societies, and advocacy for upwards of 12 years, and I've watched over these years of things have been whittling away bits and pieces. We saw the infrastructure crisis coming a long time ago, and now things have really come to a head. And thankfully, I met up with Nancy and Jody about a year ago, and we said, let's put our heads together and see what we can do for Edmontonians.
Okay, Jody.
I have a student also in Edmonton Public Schools. I strongly believe in the value of public education. He's in grade 9 and heading into high school next year. We are not sure where he'll go. There's a community school that's walkable from our house, but because it is at 123% capacity, he will be on an entrance lottery. So we won't find out until April if he gets in or not. And if he doesn't get in there, his next option is a school that's 111% capacity, which isn't great. And that's an hour bus ride from our house. So it's what we're facing in Edmonton is not unique to Edmonton. It's happening all across the province.
All right. And Jody.
Nancy.
All the other Nancy.
Oh, get it. See,
that's okay.
I knew I was going to do something like that. Okay.
I am Nancy Kirkpatrick, and I have two kids in Edmonton Public. I can go by Jody. And they're both in junior high. Like Jody's son, my oldest is facing a lottery at our community school. He had to leave our community elementary K-9 for a program with Edmonton Public. So he's already had to leave our community to get a program that he needed within Edmonton Public. And that was a lottery for grade 7. So he's lotteried in for grade 7. He won a spot. And now because he's in this school with kiddos that's their catchment, he's made some connections at that school. But because he doesn't have the right address, he has to now lottery into not the catchment high school that's over full at 123% utilization, but another high school that's at 99% utilization. And because we don't live in their catchment, we have to wait and see if he'll win a random selection spot. And then my youngest is in grade 7, and we actually put him into the out-of-community junior high to be with his brother. And he is the generation here in Edmonton Public that is facing zero high school space in 2027. Yeah.
Before we get to what is the Edmonton Public School Advocacy Network, there's a term that at least two of you have used so far that I want to spend a little bit of time exploring. You've spoken of a lottery system for kids to get into schools. Now, most people would hear lottery and go, "Oh, that sounds like fun." But I have a feeling that this lottery is a little bit more in sort of the Shirley Jackson kind of vein, the short story. I don't know. I'm going to ask you to tell me if I'm right or tell me if I'm wrong. But what is these lotteries that these kids are buying tickets for?
It's actually keeping the oldest son up at night. Most of his peers at his junior high, because they're in the catchment, they know that they're going to this specific high school. And so that high school comes in and does sort of, you know, information day. And he knows the situation. And so he asked that principal at an open house day. So I'm on a lottery for the catchment high school I'm intended to go to. But I don't want to go there because I want to go to your high school. But now I'll be lotteried into that. What do I do on selection day? Because we all have to pre-select. And she said, "Well, that can't be right." But he's right. That's the situation that he's in. And it's not a fun lottery. We're waiting until April till we find out what he'll do. And like Jody's son, if he doesn't get the lottery spot that he would like to win, he's then pushed to another high school that is the overflow for all of the high schools that they don't lottery into.
So I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, just so that our listeners and viewers can understand it correctly. The situation with the high schools is they're so full to overflowing that they're literally just opening up who gets to come into the school after the guaranteed placements.
Not quite.
Okay.
The way the lottery works is they know how many seats they have available for grade 10, and they draw names until those seats are full. And then anybody whose name isn't drawn goes to a different school.
And that's even in the catchment area.
You can only apply for these particular lotteried schools only if you're in the catchment area can you enter the lottery.
So could somebody conceivably live like four blocks away from the school and lose the lottery?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not great.
Not great.
No. I want to read, can I take a minute and just read to you what the high school situation is? Just a quick
absolutely
overview.
Yeah,
okay.
No,
so here's some high schools in Edmonton. So Vic is downtown. They have a 78% utilization. It was built in 1911. They have an enrollment of 1860 kids. Jasper Place has an 81% utilization rate. It was built in 1961. Ross Shep is at 102% utilization rate. It was built in 1957. Emmy Lazert has 100% utilization rate, built in 1969. Queen Elizabeth has an 86% utilization rate, built in 1958. East Glen has an 81% utilization rate, built in 1953. McNally has a 72% utilization rate, built in 1964. Vimy has a 95% utilization rate, built in 1957. Scona, which is an overflow for all these schools, has an 111% utilization rate, built in 1955. Lillian Osborne has a utilization rate of 123%, built in 2009. Percy Page, 103% utilization rate. It's 41 years old. Dr. Ann Anderson is one of our newest buildings, high schools, built in 2022. I'm not sure that utilization rate. I'd have to find that for you. And we have one opening up maybe next year, but they're opening up full for grades 10 and 11, and they have 2,400 seats.
So, I mean, kids should be grateful that they're able to go to school in all of these heritage buildings, I guess.
Well, we have a deferred maintenance in Edmonton of close to $1 billion for our schools.
Now, when you say deferred maintenance, I'm going to take a shot in the dark here, but that sounds like work that should be done that hasn't been done.
That's correct.
And that's $1 billion with a B. Mm. This is the worst episode of Sesame Street ever. Okay.
So I just want to add, with those utilization rates, according to, and this is all public information that anybody can read. If you go to the Edmonton Public School Board's 10-year facilities plan, anybody in Alberta can read this information. It's public information. The board considers a school full at 80% utilization.
Why are things this way?
It's a provincial government designation about utilization. So when a school is built, there are things like a music room or a library or a staff room that aren't designed for classroom instruction. But when you get to 80%, it means there are no more purpose-built classrooms available for teaching. And so then they start clawing back additional spaces like the stage, like the gym, like the library, like the staff room. And that's when you can get to a school that has 123% utilization.
So when we're talking about, so like 80% is really kind of 100%, is that, if that's what I'm hearing? And then the rest is like, well, what if we put up a tent or something? Like if we're taking over the gymnasium, we're taking over the music room, we're taking over the staff room,
which they are doing.
And you lose things like your childcare in school, and in-school childcare is really critical for families as well.
But we're coming to a point, and this is why we really are grateful that you're letting us share this, is that literally in 2 years, there won't be any space in high schools, period.
That's not great either.
No.
So is there a publicly announced plan, is how I'll cautiously word that question, to deal with 2 years from now when we're just stacking kids, I guess?
I would say no, and that's why we're here, because we see the writing on the wall and we've seen it coming for years. And again, this year we were approved for one school. We were approved for one school in Edmonton, 2,400 seats. We needed 7,000 desperately. We grew by 5,800 just this year alone. And this one that we're approved for, 2,400 seats, it'll take 3 to 5 years to build. So all we see is red flags that, you know, there's not enough space. We know we're out of space by 2027. There needs to be new. I'm sure they're crunching new numbers now based on that new 2,400 additional seats. But also, Alberta's population has exploded. So the forecasts that they've been doing over the past, they being Edmonton Public, they've been doing over the past few years, which are generally very accurate, have also been exceeded. So they didn't get enough funding for the planned number of students. And then more students than planned came, so you're in a deficit. And what happened with this budget is 2,400 seats and an additional 5,800 students this year, another 5,000 expected next year. So the gap, which may have been around 4,000 seats, now is 6,000 seats, and now is just going up. So our deficit of space is getting worse. And I think your question was, are we seeing a plan? And that's kind of what we're asking for and we're worried about. And we're really hoping it's a very collaborative plan. We need all three levels of government involved with this. We need the city involved, and we need families and parents. Because what we have seen is, I think they call it the accommodation plan, and that was presented to the board, ladies, you know, December maybe. And that is, how do we deal with this much enrollment? But really, it's a building plan. It's things like the lotteries. So there's two issues with the lotteries. One issue is it just demonstrates how full it is. And, you know, it shouldn't be a chance whether you get a seat in the school and within a reasonable distance. So the space is the one issue. The other issue is how that manifests for families. So families have to, you can't put your name in three lotteries. You can't do it. You have to just put your name into one school, wait, you know, as my friend Nancy here is doing, you wait and see if you won that lottery. And then you have to start again at another one. So so one thing that we'd like to see is something like, you know, choice 1, 2, 3. We don't even know what the demand truly is for each individual school because parents are faced with this. Do I apply to this school and have to go through this stress of this lottery? Or do I apply to that school? And then, so you're kind of faced in a very difficult position of where to put your name in first.
And I mean, you talked about the impact on families. I want to just sort of touch on something that, one of you mentioned, because this would seem to be a pretty significant impact. I think one of you said that your kid was potentially looking at, if they don't get into the school that's close, then they're looking at a 1 hour bus ride. And I'm assuming that that's like each way. So it's 2 hours potentially a day on the bus. And I can only imagine that that has fairly significant impacts on the ability to access extracurriculars and for families to do stuff because there's now an hour of extra. Like, I have a hard time getting my kids up in the morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they go to school like 8 blocks away from our house. If I had to get them up at 6:30 in order to get them on the bus, A, they'd hate me, and B, it would be a miserable experience for them. So is that also part of the concern, or am I reading that wrong?
No, that absolutely is a concern. And I think it takes also speaks to community cohesion. When we're sending our kids out of our community, they lose connection with the neighborhood. Parents aren't looking out for them. They're on a bus spending 2 hours a day with people that aren't connected to them in any way, except that they happen to be sitting on the same bus. So it decreases the community value, it decreases the educational experience, and it decreases our ability to participate in the community as a family.
I want to back up for a sec, because the three of you are part of this organization that is doing this advocacy work. And I want to talk a little bit about the organization, how it came to be, and then we'll come back to the horrible, depressing stuff. So I mean, it really is. I mean, what you're describing is very bad. It seems very bad. But how did the Edmonton Public School Advocacy Network come to be? Who is it? What is it? And sort of what is the mandate of the organization?
So I am a giant nerd and I really read a lot of reports. So my journey has been like this with my kids, and I won't get into all of that, but I like information. And so I seek it out. And I'm lucky enough that I can do that. And so it was very, Nancy ran for trustee a couple of years ago now, I think, hey? And so she added me on Facebook. And so I had read this 10 years facilities plan that came out. And throughout the report, the division is doing an incredible job with trying to get parents aware in every single spot that it could be put. This space crisis is mentioned and described in detail. Like, I really commend one of these fellows has really done a good job with these reports. And he was interviewed by Janet French on the CBC, and he said he lays awake at night worrying about this. And I can't imagine knowing what he knows and writing these reports. And I don't know. I mean, I hear him. We're trying to spread his word. So anyway, I read this report and I put on Facebook, has anybody else read this report? And Nancy said, me. And so I'm like, okay, well, this is alarming. Maybe we should be talking about this as parents and community members. And then Jody and I, our sons play hockey together. And we don't exchange recipes during hockey games. We're often talking about, I don't know, Jody, what would you say we talk about?
Yeah, changing the world.
Yeah.
That's what we talk about.
So, of course, I'm telling her this stuff that I've been reading. And then Nancy, I think, said we should form a group, or I said we should get together. And that's how it started.
So I guess, you know, hearing you talk about this report and it sounds like there are some people doing some good work in good faith. So I guess the $50,000 question, it's probably, I mean, at $1 billion, I guess, according to the
deferred maintenance
deficit of just the physical state of things. Who do we throw the rotten fruit at?
Well, I have some opinions, but I'll let everybody else talk.
Who wants to go first? Nancy, let's go. Nancy.
Hunt?
Who do we throw the rotten fruit at? We could just say this is a collective responsibility. Now, it really is. It is a three-layer problem. Most recently, of course, we've had the provincial budget. And, you know, Edmonton Public got way less than we needed. We seem to have not got our fair share, though I must say I have not read what every jurisdiction submitted as their infrastructure plan. But when you look at our growth and our growth in numbers, not just percentage, our growth in numbers is very, very high in the 5,000 a year range. And we didn't even come close. Our infrastructure plan submitted 23 projects and one project was fully funded. And I think what happens when you hear announcements, my daughter, who's all the way in Ottawa, called me and said, I heard that Alberta's putting all this funding to education. This is good. You must be happy. And I said, you know, we have to drill down into, does this work for Edmonton specifically? And that's really my focus. I haven't drilled down in everybody's needs. Happy for everybody who's had their needs met. But for Edmonton specifically, we really did not have our needs met. And now I believe it's the responsibility of the province, the Board of Trustees, and the city to work together, come up with a task force, and come up with a plan for that 15,000 spots that are needed in this 3-year plan. We're left seeing that 2,400 out of the 15,000 spots have been addressed. So it is their responsibility. And I think they'll all say each person has a different, you know, bit of the responsibility. And, you know, we would like to see them all come together and tell us, so what are we going to do? And announcements of big buildings is only one scenario. There are buildings, there are empty buildings. You know, the city and the province own empty buildings. There could be some other solutions that utilize city spaces, or I'm just saying they need to work together. And so the big ticket is the province, because they make the decisions about individual schools getting funded, individual projects getting funded. But there needs to be this, you know, working together to meet the needs, because the needs are what are laid out by our school division.
Jody, you got anything to add to that?
Well, I would say I echo what Nancy's saying. I think that we need to come together. The community needs to come together. And this is not just Edmonton. This is across the province. We need to hear from every community member who believes in public education and raise our voices collectively so that we won't be ignored. And just make sure that the government's all governments that are responsible for the situation hear us and start thinking about how they're going to address the situation. We have heard some options offered up. There are some schools in Edmonton that are less have a lower utilization rate, but those ones are in far reaches from where the growth is happening in our city, and I imagine it's the same in all of the growing communities across the province. The schools that are emptier are in the center, and the growth is happening at the edges of the communities. And we've heard of potentially shifting the schedule around, doing an early period and a late period. They're calling it block zero and block five for high school, which also goes to how do we participate in our community activities when somebody's starting school at 7 a.m. or finishing at 5:30. Like, it just, none of these things sound like good or reasonable solutions for my high school student. And I can't imagine any parent thinking that that's suitable for their student either.
Nancy?
The other Nancy?
Well, of course, I agree with everything they've said. I'm just really angry that this is where some kids are, this is what their experience is going to be. I'm really angry that this choice is not a choice for some kids. This ideology of choice in education is actually destroying some kids' public education experience. And I'm furious that this is going on. And then I get really sad. I get really sad that there isn't a public outcry about what's happening. I mean, public education is one of the most important things that we can have in our province.
I mean, one of the obvious questions, we saw record growth. I think it's record. Certainly disproportionate would be an appropriate word in regards to the amount of funding to private and charter schools. And you opened the door for me on this with the school choice piece. I'll ask the question in something of an obtuse way. Why don't you just send your kids to private and charter schools instead of the public ones?
Because that's not an option for everybody. That's but not an option.
Private and charter schools are by definition not inclusive and discriminatory. And I don't mean that they shouldn't exist. You know, there are, scenarios that private schools and charter schools can be very good for kids, but we cannot override public education, and we have to prioritize our funding for all children.
It can't be at the cost of the kids going to public.
Right. So essentially, in a private and charter school situation, you can select what students you want to serve. And the public system is obviously for everybody and has to be. And it's just the foundation of who we are, of society. If we don't have an equitable start for all of our children, then how are we going to grow our society, to grow our economy, to solve big problems? We need everybody to have access to that highest quality of education.
I'm curious, and I'll ask this to whoever wants to answer, and you can all answer if you'd like. But you know, as you're talking about the difference between charter/private schools and the public system, I get myself drawn back to a conversation that I had with a physician recently in regards to the situation with the long-term care situation. So you have people who say, we want choice in long-term care. But what has been created is a system where there are people who are quite literally stuck in hospitals for insane periods of time because they can't get a space in the public healthcare, the long-term care system. And it seems like with the push to, well, yes, but we want our choices, that's great if you can afford them. But if you can't afford to pay the exorbitant fees in the for-profit realm of for-profit long-term care, or in this conversation we're having tonight, for-profit education, then it just sucks to be you a lot. And when we're talking about a, you know, quite literally the future of the province, because that's what kids are, to go, well, yes, but also we'd like to make money, it seems like a really big flaw in priorities, I guess. So I'll just ask the question this way. Do you think that there should be public funding going towards private and charter schools? Or should it be, you know, if you want to drive a Bentley, fill your boots, but you'd better pay for it? And I'll go with Nancy H. to start with.
No public funding for private schools, period. Charters, there's a place for charters, and it's complicated because they were invented as a test bed for new educational methods and specialty programs, but the intent was that they get rolled back into public. So it's like a good concept that's kind of gone awry. So yeah, short answer, no public funds for private as they are for profit. It's not our space to fund.
I would follow up with that. Unless we return to the original intention of charter schools in the Alberta landscape for education, that the test ground is the charter school. And if it's successful, it gets rolled into the public experience, that there should be no public funding for charter schools.
Nancy Kay.
I agree. No public funds for private or charters.
Now, I'm going to pivot to the next part of the conversation, which is probably, I'm going to get some DMs for asking this question. I'm 100% certain of it. But Alberta is the one province where we have a publicly funded, I'll say separate, school system. Does that help the problem? Does that make the problem worse? Is it a don't touch that third rail, Nate? You're going to derail the conversation. Run away. What are your thoughts?
To me, I think of Catholic, the separate as public. Yeah. So okay. I'm not one of the, we can't have a Catholic system. I think that's the way it's been. I think it would be a gigantic undertaking to try and dismantle that. And I can't imagine that happening. So.
All right, Jody?
It's part of our provincial legislation that we support Catholic schools.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem, or it's part of the solution. I'm not sure which. But right now, the government is using that separation of the two types of school boards as a way to divide us. And we're all facing the same problem. We're all trying to educate our children. We're all trying to get public money. We should work together. Like, yeah. We just need to be working together.
Nancy?
Yeah, I echo some of those comments. For the particular problem we're talking about now, which is really the infrastructure funding, we're all facing the same challenges of crowded schools. So we're really in this boat together. And I know that there is some good collaboration happening between the divisions. And I know that we are very unusual in Alberta still having that because they have separated them out in other jurisdictions. And it, given the multicultural, diverse nature of Alberta, it's, you know, strange in a way that there is one religion that has its own system and, you know, not, there are many religions in the province is what I'm saying. There's many religions. So, but I also agree with Nancy that kind of dismantling doesn't seem like a something that would be good use of resources. Working together is, I have no problem with how things are functioning. I think if we were to start over again, and I know some people have written about this topic, public education was really invented and designed 100 years ago. And our world is very, very different now. And we have all sorts of interesting tools and resources at our disposal. And we haven't undertaken a redesign of public education. And it would be interesting if we started to do some research on if you started all over again, what would this look like? Would it look like what we're doing now or something completely different?
Yeah, I would probably be comfortable making the argument that blowing up one major institution in the province at a time is the tippy top of the limit. And we're going to be spending the next 20 years sorting through the rubble of healthcare anyways. So maybe not.
They're doing the same thing to these. Like they're the same. They're using the same playbook to the two biggest public systems that we have. I mean, you can see it happening. It's the same thing. And Jody and I, are we allowed to mention other podcasts?
Yeah, you can. We're not exclusive.
We're
not part of the podcast elite.
Called Public Good. And I really, really, really recommend people go back to the first two episodes. And it's out of Manitoba. And they focus on education. And there's a really good quote, and I can't credit who said it, but they say, once it's gone, it's gone. And I think we are really, really, really in a moment here in Alberta where if any Albertan believes in these systems, you need to speak up and you need to join others that are speaking up. And we have to make sure that these public systems are not gone ever. And we really have to do that now. And I can't say that enough. And that's one of my biggest motivations for relentlessly talking to people about this and pointing it out, is that these two public systems are so important. And like Nancy Hunt says, for the public education, it's like death by a thousand cuts. And we've all seen it. We're watching it happen. And we can't sit back and keep watching this happen. We have to speak up. And it's not on the teachers. And it's on us. I mean, these are our systems. And the three of us, our kids are going to be out of the system shortly. Like they're in junior high school. And if I can say anything to anybody out there with little kids, you have to get knowledge. You have to get aware of what's happening. You need to go to your school council meetings. You need to listen to your board meetings, and you need to even just glance at these reports, but you have to realize what's happening in the province right now. It's not good. And once it's gone, it's gone. They're right. And we have to do something to save these systems.
And I think when you've been involved for a long time, you see this whittling away that Nancy is referring to. So I've had kids in the system a long time. And, you know, we all used to have librarians. There were librarians everywhere and libraries. And now many schools don't have a librarian. And this is, you know, a real key part of our students' literacy and their learning. And, you know, how can we not have librarians? We used to have school nurses that were actually, you know, present regularly, counselors, the class size, the whole adult to child ratio in schools. Like these things, just little bit by little bit, you know, we're seeing things getting more stressed. The system's getting more stressed. But when you see it just as these little bits, you may not realize that there was a before to all of that. And you know, Alberta has a great reputation for education. And I see this with my daughter who started university in Ontario. And the reputation of Albertans and how she's able to succeed there, you know, really, she's very well very well educated, and we don't want to let that slip away.
There's probably an argument to be made. It's already slipping away. I mean, we've seen with the new curriculum, multiple jurisdictions that had previously said, we love the Alberta curriculum, it's fantastic and super high quality, go, we're going to, good luck with that, guys. We're going to go over, see ya. So I think that there's an argument to be made that there's already some pretty significant erosion going on. I'm curious if you've heard, you know, what are, we've had conversations on the show with teachers groups before. It's probably been 8 months or so since the last time we did like a specific teacher-centric episode. But I'm curious what you're hearing from teachers, because like what you're describing with multiple schools being over 80%, which is really 100% capacity. You know, what, my heart goes out to the students who are trying to navigate that, but it also goes out very much to the teachers who are trying to hold the whole thing together despite increasingly adverse circumstances. So I'm just curious, has your organization heard anything from teachers? Has your, as individually, and obviously we don't want to name any teachers because some people are spiteful, I'm told, but yeah, please.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what you just said. Every day I worry about sending my son to a class. He's in a grade 9 class that has 37 students. And that's not, he's an average student. He's smart, self-motivated, but he's in a classroom with English as a second language. He's in a classroom with kids with all sorts of educational complexity. And I just don't know how a teacher can make it through the day in that circumstance and come back the next day to do it again. It's not fair to the teachers that we expect them to teach in that situation. And at some point we're just checking a box. Like, we've sent our kid to school, check. They finished high school, check. Like, we are setting the next generation up for failure. We are not sending them out into the world well-equipped or well-educated if all we're doing is checking boxes. And I feel terrible.
And if they're taking the staff rooms, we heard this through our journey here. And one of the high schools, they've taken the staff room to use for teaching space. And we're all parents here. And I just keep thinking, we all need breaks from our kids. Like, I'll be honest. And so if you're in a classroom of 50 high school kids and you're looking forward to your whatever break, and now you can't go into a room with your other teachers and have that mental break, or that, you know, or testing ideas off each other, or I'm not a teacher, so I don't know. But I just think how awful that we're doing that to them. And then we're expecting them to be rejuvenated and fresh and, you know, ready to take on their job. I don't know. I think that's awful. I think that's terrible.
Nancy H., what are your, are you here? I mean, if I remember correctly from earlier in the conversation, you ran for school board trustees, so I imagine you have a couple of teachers in your orbit. What are you hearing from the teachers in Edmonton about, I mean, before I let you answer, I'll just say, like, when you guys are listing off the number of students involved in some of these classes, like, I'm thinking back to when I was in junior high. Thank you for making me relive that horror, by the way. But I'm thinking back to when I was in junior high and we had like 20, 23 kids in the class, and we still were just barely prevented from lighting that classroom on fire. And so when you're talking about 37, 50 students, that seems like, you couldn't pay me enough to do that for 8 hours a day. But Nancy, what are you hearing from your circles?
Exactly what you just said, from people who are potential teachers. You couldn't pay me enough to be in that situation. And that means we maybe aren't getting all of the you know, great potential teachers in our system that we could. So yeah, I have heard a lot from a variety of teachers, and of course there's many teachers who are still in a great situation and loving their jobs, and they do it for that passion and love for what they're doing. And, you know, I thank them greatly. And there are others who are faced with large and complex classrooms and simply not enough support resources to deal with what is what they're facing. I know teachers who've left their jobs. I know teachers who've changed from school to school or changed to fewer hours. I know teachers who've left teaching completely. Now, I don't have any statistics on this, but anecdotally, I know there's some very, very stressful situations that our teachers are in. And one thing that we are also advocating for is education standards. And it's ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous to me that we have ratios regulated for preschools and for out-of-school care, and we don't have the same for classrooms. So preschool, 1-to-12 ratio, out of school care for elementary, the whole of elementary age, 1-to-15. And yet it's okay in a classroom to have 35 kids and one teacher, kids who are in grade one who may or may not have the additional supports that they need. There are, in my journeys with alternative programs, there are some guidelines that have been created by various groups over optimal class sizes. And you know, at the young ages, you know, those numbers are in the range of 20, not 30. And with extra assistance in many cases. So, and that is something that that could be regulated.
I mean, I think though, and please correct me if I'm wrong, if you wanted to regulate the class sizes, you'd have to keep track of the class sizes. And we don't do that anymore.
You're right. And, you know, thankfully, Edmonton Public chose to still look at their class sizes. And we all really were grateful to have those reports available a few weeks ago. And we were looking school by school. And the way those class sizes are going up is quite alarming. And the largest class sizes are very alarming. Yeah, high school and the early grades are the areas that that I know I'm most concerned about.
I would say too, the teachers are going into bargaining with the province coming up, and I just encourage them to consider class size and class complexity as part of their bargaining. And it's not any different than nurses. Like, there should be standards of care for nurses. They should only be able to care logically for a certain number of patients. And maybe the two unions can be collaborating on how they're communicating those sort of negotiating needs with each other. This UCP government is doing the same thing. They're isolating people so they can't share stories. They're removing data from public view so that we can't look at what is actually going on. And it makes it easier and easier for them to cut and cut and cut.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on how to combat that to some degree, because I think, you know, one of the things that's been alluded to multiple times in this conversation has been the idea of parents need to educate themselves. Parents need to be aware of what the situation is. More people need to be aware of what the situation is. How do we get that collaborative approach between people who might think, he said cautiously, that they have diverging interests? I mean, I threw the Catholic school hand grenade into the conversation early, quite deliberately, because that typically has been the kind of thing where somebody will say, oh, if you're okay with that, then I'm out. And that seems to be one of the areas where the efforts to organize and have organizations work collaboratively falls apart, because there's all of these, you know, well, if that's your position, then I'm out. How would you say your organization wants to get people to work collaboratively on the big picture ideas and say, you know what? Yeah, there's details that need to be worked out, but we'll work those out after we stop the whole boat from sinking. Like, I'm going to go the the opposite direction of how I went last time, and I'm going to ask Nancy H to go first. How thoughts? How do we un? That's the second time this week I've had to stop myself from using that term. How do we uncomplicate the situation?
I think what you talked about a couple of things there, and I think the first thing is just sharing information. That's why we created this group. And you know, I was thanking Nancy K a couple of days ago for being the best networker ever. So I mean, why are we here? Because she called you. It is actually very difficult. Parents are very stressed. You know, there's all sorts of things going on in everybody's lives that you're just managing your day to day and your finances and your hockey and your whatever's, right? So I think that's why we exist, to try and share some of these just bits of facts. And we're not giving you an opinion. We just want to share, you know, details like, you know, $1 billion in deferred maintenance, need $1 billion for schools. Well, there you go. That's 2 billion we need. And there's lotteries all over the place. So when people are more aware, so that's part of our mission.
All right, Jody.
Okay. This is just a editorial aside. Can you repeat the question? Cause I got lost.
Yeah, no, basically, how do you get people to collaborate? How do you get people to overlook all of the little things? How does your organization want to do that? How does your organization plan to collaborate with other organizations? Pick up any of those threads and run with it.
Okay, so how do we encourage people to collaborate? I will tell you, going into the last provincial election, I was in a pit of despair, and I didn't want to be a year out from that moment and look back and realize I had done nothing to change how the whole provincial election made me feel. So by being active, I've created just a little spark of hope in my life. Doing something has allowed me to see a path forward, and it's allowed me to see that we as a community, not just parents, like this is the entire community of Alberta benefits when we have a strong public education system. So we are not exclusionary to just parents or future parents or past parents. Anyone in Alberta that believes in public education has a voice. And if we raise it together, I think that we can start to apply pressure where it is needed. We have a petition online at change.org. The petition is called Stand for Space, Stand number 4 for Space. And if you believe in public education, and if you believe that the government needs to be funding for the number of students that are in schools across the province and building schools to accommodate all of the new Albertans that are arriving every day, please join us and sign it. Together we can make a difference. That is what I honestly believe. I believe that our voice is stronger when we speak out together, and the small differences fall away when we think about the value of public education and the value that it adds to our children's life in the future, and thereby our future. Like if they have a strong future to look forward to, they will stay in the province. That means we will also stay because our children are here. But if they have no future here, they will leave, and many families will follow. So Alberta has called, people have answered, but if we can't support the families and build communities here where people feel safe and connected, they won't stay.
I love the optimism that you brought in at the end there. And I'm going to get you to plug that survey again at the, or sorry, the petition again at the end. But I mean, the point that you make there about the, you know, this is more than just parents. Like I'm somebody who struggles on the very best of day to suffer fools. I'll choose my words gently. There's always that one person in the parking lot who manages to screw it up for everybody. And one of the best ways to make fewer people like that is to have a quality education system. And I think that that's so important, because if we educate our kids, we're not just raising the level and the quality of discourse that we can have going forward into the future, but we're also making less idiots, and that's always good. Nancy Kay,
you're the networker. What's that?
You're the networker, so I want you to talk about collaboration.
No, I can't. What Jody said was perfect. Perfect. Perfectly said.
Okay, then I'll back it up, and I've started playing Pong on my screen in regards to who's speaking. We've got a pattern going on now. I'm going to keep with that. But you know, what are the big asks? If you could wave a magic wand and get one thing, I'm going to ask for one thing from each of you. If you could wave a magic wand and get one thing, what would that one thing be? And we'll go with Nancy Kay first.
I could get one thing.
In regards to this conversation, if it's just like a new car, that doesn't count.
No. I would ask, if I could get one thing, I would really, really want a government that stopped dividing people and that invested in public education.
Jody?
It's a really good question. I don't want just one thing off the list. I think if we could start with basics, I think if we could start with legislating class size and class complexity, it forces the rest of the issue to be addressed. So if we talk about limiting the size of classes, the rest is just academic.
Okay, so we've got stopping division, we've got class sizes. Nancy H.,
I was just going to say $1 billion, and that should set us up for a while. So, but I like those things too.
But I mean, here's the thing with the $1 billion, and I think this is important to highlight. That's $1 billion for Edmonton only. So yeah. I don't even want to think about what the number is for undamaging and getting all of the schools across the province up to the levels that they should be, because I bet you probably have to add at least one, if not a couple of zeros to that number to get where you need to be. So I'm not going to let you get away with $1 billion. I'm going to ask for something else with the magic wand.
My other one was the education standards. And that's what Jody said as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that just underscores the importance of it.
Yeah. The other thing that's been on my list, though, although I don't know if I can have a redo on that because she already said that, is the plan. You know, like I said, you know, we submit an infrastructure plan and it chooses to be ignored. So I think the requirement shouldn't be to, pick one thing from your plan to do or two things from your plan to do. The requirement should be to deliver to the plan, whether it's delivering in the way our division suggested to deliver it or a different way. 15,000 students need to be served. So I think there should be a requirement to serve the students that are there.
And okay. Also, like, we have to be aware, and people, when you're hearing things in the news about, oh, there's a fund to cover the growth, like, I think, I can't remember the exact name, Jody, of the, there was like a growth grant that was given. And so when we heard that announced, we thought, oh, that sounds really good. It's something like $30 million, I think it was, just before Christmas that they gave to divisions to this unprecedented growth that they're seeing in. And so we sat down and we worked out, well, there was about $5 million, we guessed. And we're not experts in any of this. This is just some moms playing with numbers. And we thought, well, $5 million, it ended up working out to be about 425 students at Edmonton Public that became funded out of the extra 5,063 that arrived between September and December.
Well, that's like almost a whole 10%.
Yeah.
So here's my next question, because I think that this is this is important, and this is where I want to kind of talk about a little bit about sort of a call to action, if you will, for the audience. So for each of you, again, if you could pick one thing that you could have whoever's listening to this. I mean, I know that we have school board trustees who listen to this. I know that we have some very angry MLAs and ministers who listen to this. And I know that we have aspiring politicians and other folks that listen to this. So if you could speak to the general public, what would be the one thing that you would ask Joe Citizen or Jane Citizen to do? And we're gonna start with Nancy H again, because I got a pattern and it's working.
Yeah, the pong. Am I the ping?
You know what I'm doing now?
I got it. Okay, so if the whole province is watching right now, I want to say to everybody, there is a funding crisis in education, and I want you all to ask questions and pay attention to what's going on in your community.
Can I just say, Nancy, what questions should they be asking? And who should they be asking those questions to?
They should be asking, you could say, attend your school council, ask your principal, your schools, your local schools, your school and school division.
Jody. Perfect.
Oh, good. I love homework. Every time we have a meeting, I get to hand out the homework. In another life, I may have been a teacher, except that I would be no good, except for the homework part. I would say, if you are in Edmonton, connect with us. If you are outside of Edmonton, connect with us. If you are looking to build an advocacy network, we have built this from the ground up, from a deck party in my backyard in the summer. We can give you tips and tricks about how to build a community of like-minded citizens who believe in public education. Most important, sign our petition, go to change.org, and the petition is called Stand for Space. And we've had an MLA say that they would bring it to the floor of the legislature if we can get enough signatures. So let's sign up.
Now, I have to ask the question, because you teed me up there. Let's say that somebody's listening to this. I love the idea that the whole province is watching this right now. I think that would be fantastic for my own reasons. But how do people connect with the Edmonton Public School Advocacy Network?
We have a website. If you Google Edmonton Public School Advocacy Network, you can find us. You can sign up for our newsletter and get homework on the regular. You can email us. We have an email address it rolls right off your tongue, Nate. It's epscnetwork@gmail.com.
Okay. We'll make sure that we include that in the show notes. Any other ways to connect? Do you have the socials? Are you on the gram or the tick? Which one of you TikToks? That's what I really want to know.
We TikTok together.
No way.
Yeah, and we TikTok, we Instagram, we have an account on Threads we're just starting to play with. We're on the X, we have a Facebook page, so we're out there. You can find us.
Did you see the TikToks?
No. Try to stay off the TikTok, because invariably, like, the problem that I have with TikTok is there's zero filters. So you can be like looking at pictures of cute animals and stuff, and then all of a sudden you'll get somebody who says, like, did you know, and then they say something horrifying, and then I have to buy a new phone. So it turns into a whole thing. But Nancy K, what's your, I love the homework term, what's your homework for people listening to this?
Start to really care about this, and you don't need to be a parent. You just need to care about public education, and we all have to fight for this.
How would you tell people to fight, Nancy? Like, where are they going to start?
Hey, once you've been on the socials and you get really mad, then you reach out to us and join us and come to our meetings. We have meetings and we always have interesting guests speaking. And just like the other ladies said, way better than I ever could, it's our voices together will make a difference. And that's just so, so important. That's all I got.
I mean, it's a hell of a value proposition. For me, I go back to the same thing. It's the value proposition is pretty simple. Would you like less stupid people or more of them? And you can actually impact the ratio that's going to exist in this province going forward. And, you know, while I'm sure that there are certain people in government who go, oh, no, we'd like all the stupid people, please. They're much easier to move around the board. But I think that most Albertans would say, no, we'd like less stupid people, please. And if you're somebody who's listening to this episode and you're one of those people who would like less stupid people making stupid decisions, then you do have to get involved in the education conversation. I got one other question I want to ask the three of you. I mean, you've been super generous with your time, and I'm guessing that there are probably some kids that are running roughshod across the houses. But one of the big things that's going on in the province right now is we're very, very good at having conversations in silos. And so I would love to hear from each of you an idea for how can people have conversations about these issues, about the education issue in particular, with maybe somebody who's not already on the same page. How do you each of you approach having difficult conversations with somebody who maybe is maybe you're thinking going into the conversation they're not going to be as receptive as somebody who's attended some Edmonton Public School Advocacy Network meetings. And I'll go with Nancy Kay first.
I had some really weird conversations recently with some younger families, and I don't know whether we should go there or not, but there's some really unhealthy things being ideas being touted in the province, and very toxic people that are getting a lot of attention and airtime. And I did have a run-in with, well, not a run-in. I had an odd exchange with a young woman. And we can't shy away from those conversations. And when you hear misinformation, especially misinformation that's harming another group of people, you cannot remain silent. You have to say, and I just said to her, that's misinformation and that's wrong. And have you seen it with your own eyes? And polite me years ago would have not gone there. I would have just kind of politely excused myself from that conversation and then been mad about it. But now we can't do that. And we have to point out things that are wrong. And because it's hurting people, these other dark forces that are out there, and we can't just sit back in our safe zone and let that occur. We have to speak out against these things. Even as 40-year-old women in Safeway, we've got to say, like, that's wrong.
All right, Jody.
By nature, I'm curious. And so when people tell me things that sound untrue or unbelievable, I just ask more questions just so that I have an understanding of where they're coming from and make sure that I'm not misunderstanding what they're saying. Sometimes in that exploration of the idea, we start to realize that the information that they are sharing is not 100% based in what is true. And it just opens the door then for me to share some of what I know and help them find information that will be useful for them to navigate what is a community problem. The space crisis is going to affect us all, and it's going to affect us sooner than anybody's willing to admit. So Be curious.
Nancy H., how do you approach these difficult conversations? How do you have these conversations with somebody that you're gonna like, oh, I don't know about this person?
Yeah, I don't see them as necessarily difficult. And I think the most important thing is to talk. The most important thing is to talk. You know, if you think you might be of a different political stripe, talk anyways. Talk and share what you know. And, you know, I teach music. I variety of things, but I teach piano, for example. And all my student families, you know, I just, you know, we chat about what I'm doing. And look, I was on the radio. Now I'm here talking about the space crunch in Edmonton. And did you know? And there's very, very low awareness. You know, not many people are like, you know, me and Nancy and looking at numbers and spreadsheets and actually really, really enjoying analyzing reports. So I think the most important thing we can do is to talk. And if you do hear a situation of, you know, having a different opinion on where the solutions might be for funding, again, let's listen and be able to hear each other and share everything. Because I think my biggest fear for my children, and, you know, education is obviously hugely important to me. One of the most important things I feel for my children and all of our children is that they are in a place where they can always ask a question and always share what they feel. And, you know, that starts with us as adults and their education in showing them, you know, them being an environment of diversity and caring. And that's what public education is. And that's why we all care about it. So I think we're all on the same page. And you just need to peel back the onion a few layers. And you'll find that, you know, at the root of it all, we all care about kids. And they're, you know, kids first for everything.
I just want to say, I really, really appreciate the time that you've all taken to have this conversation tonight. I'm going to give each of you the open floor, as it were, to add anything else that maybe we didn't get to, or that you want to highlight or reiterate or. I'm going to go back up to the top of my screen though, and I'm going to go to Nancy K first. So is there anything else that you want people to hear? Is there anything else you want people to know? Do you have any good recipes?
No, actually I don't. Jody okay. does though. She's the what? The root beer cookie recipe.
Oh, yeah. You got my attention now.
Yeah. No, I don't. I'm just really, really worried about the way things seem to be headed. And these ladies are incredible. And I'm very lucky that I am friends with them and I've connected with them. And I'm sure you can see, like, we balance each other out. And I think that is what I think of for Alberta, is a bunch of us that maybe we're too afraid to say anything. And but we're all worried and we all have the same values. And I think we need to find each other. And I think that's what we're trying to accomplish here is be that main connector. Here we are. We all value the same thing. And my new adopted rescue dog has just entered the room, so I may get knocked over. So sorry. That we just need to connect with each other, and that there is a way forward, and it's a good way forward for the public good. And we just have to be open to each other and willing to do that.
What kind of dog is it?
He's a Northern Special.
Okay.
he's not really any specific breed. He's 14 weeks old and about 35 pounds. And so I was a foster mom for two of these pups from the north. So one went to another foster home because I started to get really physical. And Lucky is now our new monster of the family. He's been destroying furniture, and my husband and kids have been keeping him in another room during this whole thing. And I don't know if you've heard a lot of yelling.
No.
We've had him to the dog park today. We've had him out for walks. We've had him in the backyard, and my teen just said he's being really charming.
I have a weakness for dogs. When we used to do on location episodes of the breakdown, that was like something that the team knew, is that if there was a dog that walked by, I'm gone.
You're
so
gone.
I just did yeah. that in the middle of this conversation. Jody, oh, floor is yours. What do you got to add? What do you got to end with?
Oh, let me see. There's so much. So much. I would say if you are feeling like you are in a state of despair, my best prescription for alleviating that is to participate in democracy. And how you do that is connecting with your elected officials at all levels. So connect with your municipal government, connect with your school trustee, however that looks in your community, connect with your MLA, let them know that you are concerned about the future of public education in the province. Connect with us. We will help you set up your own grassroots movement in your own community. We'd be happy to do that. And sign the petition. Let me say that one more time. Sign the petition.
There we go. And we'll make sure we have the link to the petition in the show notes as well. Nancy H., I got a question I got to ask first before I let you have the floor.
Sure.
Because it's been in my ear since we started this. Am I here in Maritimes?
Oh, you are very perceptive, but you are not.
Oh, no.
I'm first generation Canadian, and my parents are English.
Oh.
So I have a hint of, yep, and I did spend a short time living in the UK, yeah.
Okay, yes, a couple of the R's were making me wonder.
I know, so yeah.
I had to ask. It's like almost well Nova Scotia, but not quite.
Yeah, it's my own brand. So yeah, first of all, thank you, Nate. This is exactly, you know, the type of forum that's so wonderful as far as sharing our knowledge and building awareness of the types of things that that we're concerned about. And I think I want to leave everybody with just the picture of, over the next 10 years, Edmonton Public has stated we need 50 schools, 50 schools within 10 years. Okay, so that was before this recent announcement. So we needed 5 per year. And now we need 5.4 per year because we've only got 9 more years. And then, you know, if the same thing happens the next year, then we're going to need 6 per year. So you see what's going on. And just imagine that number. You know, this is a lot of schools. That's a lot of schools. So the gap is really large. And the crisis that's been predicted for 10 years, it's real. And we are under stress. My daughter in a very crowded school, it's very crowded. And that, you know, makes for a less than optimal experience. And because of what's happening, we know this is getting worse before it's getting better. So how can we help to make it better? We need to all support each other. We all want success. We all want our students to have a great experience. And I'm not sure how they're going to fill this massive, massive gap. And there's many ways. So I think we all keep talking and support everybody around us to share that information and whatever solutions are out there. Let's work towards them together. And please sign the petition.
Do you guys have a petition or anything? I want to thank all three of you for taking the time to chat tonight. I want to thank you for your advocacy. I find it wild that a premier who in part ran her leadership race on the premise of we have to get, and quite frankly, a government and cabinet that governed and then ran on the notion that we have to get kids back to school all the way through the pandemic. It was, we got to get kids back to school. Education is so important. And now when it's time for the rubber to actually meet the road, the reaction is sort of like, look over there, we're going to do some coal mining. Let's talk about that for a while. There seems to be a lot of not focus on making sure that schools are the cathedrals that they very, quite frankly, should be. So thank you so much for your advocacy. Thank you for this conversation. And I hope you stay in touch. I hope we can get some good updates that the petition blew up and that whoever this top secret MLA is was able to introduce it in the legislature.
Yeah, us too. Thank you so much. This was so great.
And that's it for another episode of The Breakdown. As always, if you appreciate the kind of content that we're trying to produce here, we would love nothing more than if you thought about signing up to be one of our Patreon sponsors at www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab, where for just the price of a fancy cup of coffee a month, you can help us continue to produce this kind of content. Whether you're listening to the audio version of the podcast, in which case, maybe leave a review and a rating, or whether you're watching it on one of our streaming platforms, we want to say a big thank you to everybody who is part of The Breakdown's audience. And as always, take care of each other and keep the conversation going.